you can start your day off right. When you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome in Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast, presented by Superbook Sports. Eric Dean here of Mile High Sports, and I want to go over the Avalanche's most recent play here on April 2nd. We're literally, guys, we are less than 3 weeks away from the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I don't think it's really clicked in my brain just yet. But the NHL season, for the Avs at least, ends on April 18th. The Stanley Cup playoffs begin on April the 20th. So we are talking 2 weeks from this upcoming Saturday will be the first day. Will the Avs play on the 20th? Probably not. I would assume the 21st will be that first game, more than likely at home, but we'll see what goes on. One of the things we're going to discuss here today is the playoff race and the implications for where the Avalanche could wind up after going 3-2-1 in their last six games, which 3-1-1 at home, and then a loss on the road in Columbus, of all places. So let's start with that Columbus game where the Avs, I don't want to just say they got goalied, but they did kind of get goalied, but they just didn't play a great game overall. It was their last game against an Eastern Conference team, and they lost their last three against the East. The Montreal Canadiens ended their nine-game winning streak. The New York Rangers beat them in the shootout and gave them their first OT/shootout loss on home ice. And then the Columbus Blue Jackets, somehow, beat them 4-1, obviously putting three goals on Justus Annunen, and then adding an empty netter there late. The Columbus Blue Jackets, those of 25 wins, those of 62 points, fourth from the bottom in the NHL, and they're nestled pretty safely in that 29th spot. Anaheim, Chicago, and San Jose are ways away from them. They are 10 points and more, up to 20 points behind for San Jose. And the Arizona Coyotes have 5 points up on them in 28th, as well as a game in hand. So safe to say Columbus is going to be in that fourth spot. So that's the team the Avalanche lost to. Does it look great? No. Does it really matter? We'll see with the playoff race. Is it anything to be concerned over? No, not at all. So the Avs don't play that well. And I think the biggest thing is, I'm not going to sit here and break down a game against the Columbus Blue Jackets, but the big thing to take away from it is the playoff race. By losing to the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Avalanche are now 3 points back of the Dallas Stars for first place in the Central Division. The Dallas Stars have just as many wins, 47 in 75 games, but the Stars are 19-9 losses compared to OT losses. The Avalanche are 22-6. So the Dallas Stars have 3 extra overtime loss points. Colorado has all the tiebreakers, though. So if you kind of break it down a little bit more precisely, if the Avalanche want to win the division, and this doesn't even account for Winnipeg, who is 4 points back of Colorado. So let's pretend the Avalanche don't completely implode and the Stars don't completely implode, and Winnipeg is pretty much going to get stuck in third place in the Central. Colorado plays the Dallas Stars one more time. Colorado is also 3-0 against the Dallas Stars this season. Let's just say, hypothetically, the Avalanche win that game. It could be even overtime, whether regulation or OT. Just for fun, let's say it's an OT. The Avalanche are now 2 points back of the Dallas Stars, and they would each have, aside from that game, not that the Avalanche's next game on Thursday is against the Dallas Stars, but aside from that game, each team would have 6 games left. Colorado would be at 102. Dallas, in this hypothetical scenario, would be at 104. So the Avalanche would be 2 points back if they win that game against the Dallas Stars later on in the month of April. And in the remaining 6 games, all they have to do is be 2 points back of the Dallas Stars. 2 points better than the Dallas Stars. If they tie, the Avalanche have the tiebreaker. The only way the Dallas Stars will take over the tiebreaker is if in those remaining 5 or 6 games, Colorado wins like 4 of them, and they're all of them are in overtime or the shootout. Very unlikely. If the Avs win in regulation, then all they have to do is be 1 point better than the Dallas Stars in the remaining 6 games they have compared to the Stars. Granted, the Dallas Stars are hot right now. They're 8-2 in their last 10. The Avs are 7-2-1 in their last 10, so they've made up a point on Colorado. More importantly, the Dallas Stars have won 7 straight games. Also crucial to note, The Stars have 5 more games remaining, I believe, on home ice and 2 remaining on the road. And they're actually pretty even between the two. At home, they're 22-10-4. On the road, they're 25-9-5. So the Avs got a take up. I believe it'll be at Ball Arena later on in the month of April. And in the remaining games, Colorado, assuming they beat the Stars, whether in OT or regulation, have to be, and it's this upcoming Sunday at 8 p.m. at Ball Arena, they have to be 1 or 2 points better than them in the remaining 6 games each team has. So can the Avalanche win the division? Absolutely. Is it by any means a guarantee? No, and I think that loss to Columbus makes it a little bit more tougher looking at the standings now, but we'll see how it all shakes out. All it takes is, you know, whenever a team goes on a winning streak, it's pretty easy to lose 2 in a row coming out of it. You know, the Avs had a 9-game winning streak and then got beat by the Montreal Canadiens, lost in the shootout to the New York Rangers in one of the best games of the year at Ball Arena, in my opinion. And suddenly they collected 1 of 4 points. So something like that could very well happen to the Dallas Stars. And the Avs could string together 2 straight wins against the Wild and the Oilers. And we're having a different conversation next time, you know, when I'm doing this podcast. Right now, it does look a little bit tougher. Is that anything to be concerned about? And if you ask me, no. The Colorado Avalanche at this point are pretty much guaranteed that they are going to face any number of teams except for literally 2. The Edmonton Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks. Colorado could finish, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and put the Dallas Stars in there too. They're pretty much guaranteed not facing Edmonton, Vancouver, and Dallas. Because the only way they face Dallas is if Winnipeg is 7 points better than the Stars and 4 points better than the Avalanche in only 7 games. That is going to take a lot. The Avalanche would have to be .500. The Dallas Stars would have to go like 0-6-1, and Winnipeg would have to go like 6-1 or damn near run the table to make that happen. So we're going to pretend that's not going to be a thing. Dallas, Edmonton, Vancouver out of the equation. Because I don't think Edmonton's going to completely implode in a way where both LA and Vegas are better than them. So the Avalanche are guaranteed not to face those 3 teams, which means in the 2-3 matchup, they're going to get either the Winnipeg Jets or the Nashville Predators, who are 3 wins, well, 6 points back of the Winnipeg Jets, and they have a game in hand. Granted, the Preds have lost 2 games in a row in regulation, one of them to Colorado, which we'll talk about here in a minute. And Winnipeg has the tiebreakers. So ultimately, Nashville, even with winning the game in hand, in the remaining 7 games would have to be not just 4 points better than Winnipeg, they would have to be 4 points better than Winnipeg in the remaining 7 games just to tie them. They would have to be 5 points better than Winnipeg in the remaining 7 games to surpass them. So if Nashville goes 5-2 in those remaining 7 games, and this is under the assumption that they win the game in hand, they've collected 10 points. That means in Winnipeg's remaining 7 games, they can only collect 5 points. 5 out of 14. 5 out of 14 is, what is that, 2-4-1. So Nashville would have to go 5-2. Winnipeg would have to go 2-4-1. That's what it would take for Nashville to pass Winnipeg. So you can pretty safely assume, whether the Avs have home ice advantage or not, if they're in the second or third place matchup, they're going to face Winnipeg, whether at home or on the road, depending on who has home ice advantage. In the wild card, assuming the Avalanche can pass the Dallas Stars in the scenario I discussed a couple minutes ago, it's going to be any one of Nashville, LA, or Vegas. So you're looking at 3 teams, well, 4 teams with the Winnipeg Jets that the Avalanche could face in the first round. And if you asked me right now who I would pick for the Avs to face, the obvious answer is the LA Kings. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They've lost 3 straight games in regulation. And the LA Kings have a goaltending tandem of Phoenix Copley and Cam Talbot. Let's look at the other teams. The Nashville Predators, UC Saros. Not sure you want to face that. The Vegas Golden Knights, Aiden Hill in the playoffs. We'll see how he does. He's kind of been hurt recently, him or Logan Thompson. You know, it's not the best, but definitely better than what the LA Kings have. Winnipeg Jets, Connor Hellebuyck. Nashville Predators, UC Saros, obviously. So you're looking at 2 teams with a Hellebuyck and a Saros. You're looking at 1 team with an Aiden Hill, who, by the way, just won the Stanley Cup. If he's healthy, it'll be a problem. And then you're looking at the LA Kings, Cam Talbot, Phoenix Copley. The LA Kings are the easy answer, but is it that much of a difference compared to the other teams? And I would say at this point, no. the Kings are clearly the worst team in the Western Conference from the eight teams that are going to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, and this is without the scenario that St. Louis somehow catches them, they're 3 points back, and the LA Kings have a game in hand. So it's pretty certain here that LA or Vegas are going to hold on to that second wild card spot. Most likely LA, because they are now 3 points back of Vegas with eight games remaining for both teams. The LA Kings are clearly the easiest team. They're the ones you probably want to face. But when you look at Vegas, Winnipeg, and Nashville at this point, it's clear cut. The Avs are going to have a tough first round opponent. Which one do you want to face? Pick your poison. I mean, the Avs last year didn't want to face Dallas, didn't want to face Minnesota, didn't want to face this team, that team. The best thing they could do was bust ass, end of the regular season, win the division, and face those low hanging fruit of an opponent with Philip Grubauer in goal, the Seattle Kraken, first time in the playoffs, and we all saw how that went. Granted, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, what I'm trying to get at is, I don't think the opponent matters at this point. Do you want home ice advantage? Yes. Do you want the highest seed possible to have home ice advantage for a longer time? Also, yes. Because if Colorado plays Winnipeg and beats them, the Jets are 4-5-1 in their last 10. They've kind of been reeling a little bit. I don't love Winnipeg's defense. I do love their goaltender. But the Avs have a strong offense, assuming everybody's healthy. Val Nichushkin, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen. Like, it's pretty easy to say the Avalanche are the favorites there. Does that mean they win? No, we saw it last year, but the Avalanche would be the favorites there. But if they beat the Winnipeg Jets and they have home ice advantage, you are likely looking at a series against the Dallas Stars unless they would get upset by one of LA or Nashville. So then you're on the road. And then if you beat the Dallas Stars, then you're probably on the road against the Vancouver Canucks, maybe the Edmonton Oilers if they can catch the Avs. Colorado's got 5 points up on the Oilers. However, the Oilers have two games in hand, so they can make up four of those points, and they also face the Avalanche. They can make up another 2 points there if they beat the Avs. Well, actually, they face the Avs twice. Once at home, once on the road. The road game is this upcoming Friday. The home game is the finale of the regular season, which could have Art Ross Trophy implications. We will talk about that as well. So, like I said, it's we've gotten to a point where this is not 2022, where you have the St. Louis Blues as the eighth seed. The closest thing to that is the LA Kings, and they can get hot. Or, sorry, not the St. Louis Blues. That was 2021. The Nashville Predators without UC Soros when they had Big Save Dave Riddick and Connor Ingram before he became the Connor Ingram we know him now. Granted, he had a brilliant game two against the Avs despite facing 50-something shots. So the first-round opponent is going to be difficult regardless. I think the biggest thing for the Avalanche is getting everybody healthy and ready to go. So what does that start with? It starts with Val Nichushkin. I have said it time and time again. The Avalanche are a much better team with Val in the lineup compared to without. I haven't looked at the updated numbers anytime recently, but Colorado, time and time again, if you look at their numbers with Val Nichushkin compared to without, they are like over an 82-game pace, like a 125-point team with Val in the lineup, and they're like an 85-point team with him out of the lineup. He doesn't play well against the Montreal Canadiens. We find out he's got a lower body injury, misses the game against the New York Rangers, misses a game against the Nashville Predators, misses a game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Against the Rangers, the Avalanche scored first, tied it up, lost in the shootout. Against the Nashville Predators, Colorado trailed 3-1 and 4-2, ended up winning 7-4. Their high-powered offense came to play. Against the Columbus Blue Jackets, we talked about it earlier, they lost 4-1. Empty netter, 3 goals on Anonin, 1 goal for the Avs came from Chris Wagner, who came in to coincidentally replace one of Trenin or Nichushkin, who missed that game. But the Avs are a much better team with Val in the lineup. You want him to be healthy. And for those that have made the jokes that, uh-oh, the Avalanche are being mum on what is going on here, and Val doesn't really have a lower body injury, and there's a lot of question marks there. And to be honest, between you and me, I don't blame you for having those question marks and not trusting the team on how they report Val Nichushkin news. But I am going to be here to put that all to bed, because against the Nashville Predators, Val Nichushkin was in the dressing room, fist bumping teammates, walking out as we were walking in the media post game. He was skating on the ice today, Family Sports, on Tuesday earlier this morning. Evan Rowell, thanks to him over at Colorado Hockey Now, he's got video of it. And he was skating with a new friend in Nikolai Kovalenko. So between getting Val Nichushkin healthy, who is expected to meet the Avalanche on their road trip, according to Jared Bednar. And it wouldn't surprise me if Val is feeling good enough to play. It wouldn't surprise me if by the time you guys are listening to this podcast on Wednesday, Val is boarding a flight to meet the Avalanche in Minnesota to play Thursday the following day, because Colorado played Monday. They have both Tuesday and Wednesday off. So that gives you an extra day to get Val there. If he doesn't meet them there, maybe he flies in there, doesn't take the ice, but plays Friday in Edmonton, which would be huge to have Val against the Oilers. Then there's the Nikolai Kovalenko case, who, according to Evan Rowell, obviously he had videos of him skating today at Family Sports. He looked to be doing pretty good. He looks like he's getting healthier. Looks like it's a big progress for him. A lot of progress there. For someone like Kovalenko, I think it would be paramount to get him in for a regular season game or two. The thing is, here's the remaining Avalanche schedule. I believe it's one of the toughest in the league. You got the Minnesota Wild, Edmonton Oilers back-to-back on the road. Then you go home Dallas, home Minnesota, home Winnipeg, road Vegas, home Edmonton. Kovalenko's playing a tough team. Unless he comes in for that game by April 9th, a week from today, against the Wild, he's probably going to face the Jets, Golden Knights, and Oilers, and even the Wild. No cakewalk. So he doesn't have any easy games. You want to get Kovalenko in before the end of the regular season, and hopefully all goes well. He's healthy within the next week, and he can play 3-4 games. That way you know what you got there. And then you got Duhaime. You got Trennan, hopefully coming back from whatever ailed him and kept him out of the lineup on Monday. Obviously, you'll also have Chris Wagner if needed to go that low into the depth chart. You'll have Joel Kiviranta if needed to go that low into the depth chart. Jean-Luc Foudy. But you'll have Duhaime, Trennan, Kovalenko, Cogliano, Miles Wood, Ross Colton. Like, you are going to have Zach Parise. Options galore for that bottom six. So getting Kovalenko in there would be huge. The Avalanche are a much better team with Val Nichushkin, and that's been proven time and time again, and I look forward to seeing him back in the lineup soon. I do want to touch on Justus Annanen, and specifically the game he had against the Nashville Predators, because it kind of stems from an issue that has been ailing Alexander Georgiev all season. And it's something he has been outwardly outspoken about with us. It's his temper and his emotions. I think Georgiev's a great goalie. I think Georgiev's a great goalie when his mind and his headspace are in the right place, which you can say that literally about any goalie that plays hockey, not just in the NHL. So it is a cop-out by me to say that. We saw how Georgie played last year in the regular season. We saw how he tried to hold the team in as much as he can against Seattle with a team that was just decimated with injuries. And we saw how he struggled at times this year, but outside of this recent stretch of like one or two games, Georgie, since coming back from that road trip coming out of the All-Star break, I tweeted it out a couple weeks ago, one of the best goalies in the NHL. He had like a 922 save percentage, crazy win-loss record. I think at the time it was 8-2. It's probably like 10-4 at this point, maybe 10-4-1 if you include the Rangers game, and a great save percentage. And then Justus Annanen behind him, obviously led in 3 goals against Columbus, but was riding in the 930s in save percentage since that 6-game road trip coming out of the All-Star break. So he can get it done if he's got his mind right. The problem is, against the Nashville Predators, and I'm sure you guys have all read this and seen this by now, I wrote about it, Evan Rowell wrote about it, I know the Denver Post wrote about it, and Jared Bednar spoke about it when I asked him. Was Georgiev's pull in the Nashville game, did the fact that he shot the puck over the glass in frustration after the 4th goal and earned himself an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for doing that, did that play a part in pulling him? And Jared said yes. And if you remember back to that game, well, actually, if I remember back to that game, there was, you know, the 4th goal went in, the Nashville Predators took a 4-2 lead, and I looked over at the bench and Justus Annanen just sat there, didn't move. And they were, you know, celebrating, Nashville celebrating their goal. They're getting ready to, line up for the faceoff. And then the ref goes out and announces there's a 2-minute unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on the Avalanche goalie. Nashville's going on the power play 5-on-4. And in that moment, you look over at the Avalanche bench. Justus Annanen's getting his stuff ready. He's climbing over the bench, skating toward the crease, and Georgiev is coming off. So very much so, Bednar saw him shoot the puck over the glass, something he's spoken about before, how Georgiev needs to start to control his emotions, and said, this guy's done. He took him out. The game on Monday against the Columbus Blue Jackets was always going to be a scheduled start for Anenin. The Avs have been riding a very good cadence of two Georgie, one Anenin for several weeks now. And Georgie, you know, Anenin got Montreal, Georgie got the Rangers, Georgie got Nashville, Anenin got Columbus, and obviously finished Nashville. So that was always going to be the plan. And now you're going into a back-to-back, Edmonton or Minnesota and Edmonton. You know very well that Eustis is getting one of these games. Georgie's getting one of these games. I don't think you're playing the same guy two nights in a row. If you ask me, I would put Georgie against the Oilers because you want him back against the better team, playing sharp like he did against the Rangers up until the shootout, and being the Avalanche's starter. So if you see Eustis get another start against the Minnesota Wild on Thursday, I wouldn't call that a cause for concern. I would call that Jared Bednar playing this the right way. But there's also the factor that if this continues, will Eustis get more games, more opportunity, perhaps starts in the playoffs? Who knows? It's anybody's guess. But the one thing that I do like about Jared Bednar is he has been like this for years. He does not manufacture any type of goalie controversy. And if the team is having a goaltending controversy, he will never make it known. He was very adamant in the days of Grubauer and Francouz. So let's think back to the 2020 regular season before the COVID pause. Georgie was hovering around like a 915 save percentage, and Frankie was like a 925 and was clearly the better goalie. He looked better when he was in the net. And Jared Bednar always went out of his way to say, my starter is Grubauer. When he left, Darcy Kemper came in. He was very clear. Kemper's my goalie. Frankie's my backup. When Kemper walked, or before he walked, the Avalanche traded for Georgie. I forget which reporter during our media conference with Jared Bednar later on asked him, like, you brought in this backup from the New York Rangers. Also, your backup, Pavel Francouz, just won 6 of the 10 playoff games necessary to win a Stanley Cup. He swept the freaking Edmonton Oilers on his own. And obviously came in relief in the Nashville series to finish that series as well. Is this an opportunity where you have two goalies fighting for the starting position? And Jared Bednar very firmly, very quickly said, Alexander Georgiev's a starter. We traded for him to be the starter. So he was very adamant on Saturday after the Nashville game when we asked him about Georgiev and Anenin to say, Georgie's our starter. Does that mean it's going to stay like that? It's going to depend on how Georgie does. It's going to depend on how he controls his emotions. It's going to depend on how Eustis Anenin does. Am I ready to hand the crease to Eustis? Absolutely not. You know, he came in against Nashville, made 22 saves, and then the very next game against the Columbus Blue Jackets let in 3 goals on 24 shots. And, you know, a lot of that was everything was going right for the Blue Jackets, nothing for the Avalanche. But it's not as clear-cut Eustis is the better goalie on April 2nd, 2024, as people want to believe. Does that mean Eustis could be frickin' the next Mika Kiprasov? Like, yeah, sure, maybe. But April 2nd, 2024, when I'm recording this podcast, I'm not ready to say, give the crease to Eustis and let him run with it. Not in a season where the Avalanche are looking to win another cup. But just like the last Stanley Cup, granted that was injury-related, the backup goalie won 6 of the 16 playoff games. If you need your backup goalie, you make the switch. You don't ride or die with Georgiev if you don't feel confident, and Jared Bednar will not. He will not ride and die with Georgiev if he loses that confidence. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I think the Avs goaltending situation, despite all that, looks like the best it's been all season because they have a capable backup. This isn't the Ivan Prosvetov with like an 8-something save percentage and Georgiev with like an 890 save percentage. This is Georgiev in his last 10-20 games, giving you upwards of 915, and Eustis Anenin in his last 7 or 8 or 9, whatever it's been since the All-Star break, giving you upwards of 925. So I think their goaltending situation is best. I think it's great that they didn't need to spend any assets on a backup goalie and try to acclimate him to the system. UC Parkala and this Avalanche staff has worked really hard on developing Eustis Anenin, and it has paid dividends over these last 3 months, and you love to see that. Like, genuinely, you love to see that. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But I want to end with Nathan MacKinnon's point streak that came to an end in a very controversial-ish type of fashion. The Art Ross Trophy race, the Hart Trophy race. So MacKinnon against the Rangers, we've, you know, it's all been well documented now. Devon Taves shoots the shot from the point that was set up by McKinnon. We all thought Mikko Rantanen tipped the point shot to tie the game up late in the third period to keep McKinnon's point streak alive. The home point streak, I should say. Well, the 19-game point streak, too. We come to find out that Ryan Lindgren actually knocked the puck in with his stick, but Mikko Rantanen also hit Lindgren's stick into the goal with his stick. In the end, it became a judgment call. It became a judgment call of, did Mikko Rantanen whack at Lindgren's stick, which whacked at the puck to go in? Because if so, McKinnon gets the assist, and so does Devon Taves. Or sorry, McKinnon gets the assist and Devon Taves gets the goal, but Mikko didn't touch it, but it's not counted as an own goal. Or did Ryan Lindgren get possession of the puck and shoot it into his own goal? And it was determined and it was deemed after they reviewed it, the NHL reviewed it, that the way the puck went into the net, again, subjective call, was that Ryan Lindgren tried to push the puck under Shesterkin and ended up pushing it all the way under him to the goal. Is that what happened? Perhaps. Is that how I saw it? Sure, perhaps. Like, it's, again, it's a subjective call. We can't make that call without asking Ryan Lindgren what his intentions were. And I don't think Ryan Lindgren gives two shits about sharing his intentions, because I don't think he cares about Nathan McKinnon's point streak. Do I think the point streak should have ended? No. Do I think it's okay that it ended? Yeah, sure. It's fine. The one argument that I heard that was the best argument for why it should not have ended is, in a hypothetical situation, if the New York Rangers had a delayed penalty, let's say while McKinnon was doing his thing in the offensive zone before he passes it to Taves, somebody hooked McKinnon, ref's arm goes up. Delayed penalty call. When the Rangers touch the puck, we're going to blow the whistle dead and give the Avalanche a power play. So McKinnon gets hooked in this hypothetical scenario, passes it to Taves. Taves takes that point shot. Puck ends up in the crease. Ryan Lindgren's stick knocks it into the goal. Would the refs have blown it dead and given the penalty to the Rangers, or would they have counted the goal? And the reason why I say that is because had they blown it dead, obviously Ball Arena would have lost its mind. Give us the goal, not the power play. What are you doing? But that would have been admitting that Ryan Lindgren had possession of the puck. And by him having possession of the puck, because we've seen, like, the puck can deflect off a stick, that doesn't blow the whistle dead in a delay penalty call. You legitimately have to have possession. The team has to possess the puck in order for the ref to blow the whistle and give them their penalty. So had they blown the whistle, it would have been an admittance in this hypothetical fake scenario that I'm creating that Ryan Lindgren got control of the puck. Therefore, the Rangers have now been assessed a penalty before the puck went into the net, because as soon as Lindgren possesses it, ref blows the whistle, penalty on the New York Rangers, hooking. But in my opinion, they would have counted the goal. They would not have called it a penalty. Again, fake scenario. But had they not called it a penalty, that would be admittance that Ryan Lindgren did not possess the puck. And if Ryan Lindgren did not possess the puck, it is not an own goal. And if it is not an own goal, it is a Devon Taves goal assisted by Nathan McKinnon. So that's the best argument I heard for why the point streak should continue. But at the same time, it is, like, in the reality of the situation is that it is a judgment call. It's a 50-50 call. Do I think the point streak should continue or should have continued? Yes. Am I okay with it ending? Also, yes. Because again, judgment call, flip a coin, heads or tails. Nathan McKinnon's point streak was heads. It landed on tails. They made the call. They reviewed it. End of the point streak. McKinnon comes back the very next night against the Nashville Predators and puts up four, well, not the next night, but the next game, and puts up 4 points. We love that. Then he comes out against the Columbus Blue Jackets, big fat zero, on the same night where Connor McDavid and Nikita Kucherov each only had 1 point. The reason why that Columbus game, just like it could affect the playoff implications, like I was talking earlier with the Dallas Stars, the reason why that game could badly influence the Art Ross Trophy race is, right now, McKinnon and Kucherov are tied at 127 points. Fucking crazy. Connor McDavid right behind them at 126. McKinnon has 7 games remaining. Kucherov has 8 games remaining. McDavid has 9. So McDavid, all he needs to do is be 2 points better than McKinnon in 2 extra games. So if in the next 7 games, McKinnon puts up 15, which is pretty damn good. That's over 2 points per game. All Connor McDavid has to do is put up 17 in 9 games, which is not even 2 points per game, which if you've been keeping track of Connor McDavid, he's putting up 2 points per game right now. That Columbus game was the best opportunity for Mikko, well, Mikko would have been on it too, but for Nathan MacKinnon to just casually stroll to a 3-point night against a bad team, climb up to 130 points, be 3 points up on Kucherov and 4 up on McDavid with an extra game for Kucherov and 2 extra games for McDavid, a little more reasonable. So we'll see how the Art Ross trophy race shakes out. You know, the Avalanche several weeks ago around the trade deadline, after they traded Bowen Byram against the Minnesota, or not the Minnesota Wild, against the Buffalo Sabre, whoever the hell they played the game before the Red Wings. I want to say Chicago. Yes, it was the second in a row Justus Annan shutout against Chicago. Before they traded Bowen Byram, MacKinnon had 4 points. 2 days later, the Avalanche trade Bowen Byram. They play the Detroit Red Wings. MacKinnon had 4 points again. He put up 8 points in 2 games. Then the Avalanche played the Minnesota Wild. MacKinnon had a point then too. 9 points in 3 games, 8 in 2 games. He's going to need something like that to really start to separate himself, which is very possible. He's been doing it all season. But if that's not the case, it's seeming very likely that Connor McDavid is going to catch him, maybe even Nikita Kucherov. What does it do to the Hart Trophy race? Anybody's guess. What Connor McDavid is doing to end the season is incredible. And the storyline to end the year often plays a big part in the Hart Trophy and sways voters. I should have a vote this year. We'll see. I've had a vote the last couple years. It won't sway mine unless Connor McDavid puts up freaking 30 points, 25 points over the next 7 or 8 games or whatever, 9 games. But what McDavid has been doing is going to sway some voters. So it might take the Art Ross Trophy for Nathan MacKinnon to win this thing. Over the month of March, coincidentally enough, Connor McDavid had 31 points in 15 games. So 1 point more than 2 points per game. 30 and 15 would have been 2 points per game. He had 31. Nathan MacKinnon did the same thing. He had 27 points in 13 games, 1 point above 2 points per game, which would have been 26. Problem is here, Connor McDavid does that again. And, you know, similar to the month of March, month of April, Connor McDavid will have 2 games more than Nathan MacKinnon. So Nathan MacKinnon can literally, in the last 7 games, put up 15 points, and Connor McDavid could do the same thing, 1 point above 2 points per game, and put up 19 in the last 9. He wins the Art Ross. I genuinely am curious to see how the Hart Trophy race goes, because in the 2018 season, the late push from Taylor Hall swayed a lot of voters. Will it sway enough voters away from Connor, away from MacKinnon toward McDavid to give him the Hart Trophy? Or will Nathan MacKinnon, and let's face it, 2018 will play a part in this, have a lot of voters saying we can't possibly take another one away from this guy. He deserves it. I, for one, am excited to see which way this guy goes. I, for one, am so excited to see Nathan MacKinnon bust his ass to try to win this thing. But the biggest factor in all of this, in my opinion, is the fact that Connor McDavid, like I said, has 2 extra games than Nathan MacKinnon. But the Avalanche and the Oilers face off against each other twice. The last time they played, we all saw Nathan MacKinnon with less than a second left set up Arturi Lehkonen for the game-winning goal in overtime to keep his point streak alive on the road, not the home one, to keep his actual full-season point streak alive. He earned 1 point. However, Connor McDavid was held off the score sheet. Connor McDavid hasn't been held off the score sheet a lot in recent memory, but the Avalanche managed to do it in Edmonton on a Saturday night. 2 more games against McDavid. If MacKinnon could put up 4 or 5 points in those 2 games, again, does that seem crazy? Abso-freaking-lutely not. If he can do that, and the Avalanche can keep Connor McDavid at bay once or twice, looking pretty good for Nathan MacKinnon to win the Art Ross Trophy. And the last thing I want to do is kind of go over Connor McDavid's most recent stretch of games. Before facing the Avalanche on March 16, he had 2 games in a row, 3 points, 3 points. Against the Avalanche, big fat 0 and 24:04 of ice time, -2. Since then, 2 points, 4 points, 3 points, 2 points, 2 points, 3 points, 3 points, and then only one on April Fool's Day yesterday against the St. Louis Blues. This dude, coming out of the Avalanche game where he has 0 points, had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row with multiple points. One of them was a 4, 3 of them was a 3, 3 of them was a 2. Faces off against the St. Louis Blues yesterday, April 1st, only has 1 point. So if the Avalanche could find a way to continue to hold Connor McDavid at bay, 1 point, 0 points in both games, let Nathan MacKinnon compile 4 to 5 points on Stuart Skinner and the Edmonton Oilers defense, really helps McKinnon's case for both the Art Ross and the Hart, because even in those head-to-head games against MacKinnon, he would have been the better player. That'll sway voters as well. Like I said, I'm so excited to see which way this goes, but we're going to put a stop to the podcast here. I will chat with you guys again soon. Let's let the Avalanche's road trip finish up with this back-to-back. We'll be back at Ball Arena, and like I said, 18, 19, potentially 20 days away from game one, more than likely here in Denver at Ball Arena. I am so excited. Stanley Cup playoffs right around the corner. It's going to be great.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.